Chapter 3. Forgiveness. Turning it all over to God. To me, this simply meant the bridge project, but not to God. He wanted more. After giving the first bridge update to my congregation that Sunday, I began to feel something stirring in my heart. I already felt my involvement in the bridge project bringing me closer to God. On Tuesday, March the 30th, I finished typing a sermon I had been working on all month. I titled it The Faith Message, based on the Gospel of Matthew chapter 14, where Jesus calls Peter to step out of the boat and come to him on the water. The sermon was filled with examples from my own life, situations where I had stepped out on faith to help someone in need, trusting for God to take control of the circumstances. The sermon's emphasis is that faith is you taking the first step, with Jesus ready to take your hand and lead you the rest of the way. I intended to share the message with other church congregations, simply to encourage people to step out on faith and help others in this world, even in small ways. And yes, encourage them to support the Bridge Project in Nicaragua. I read back over the sermon several times. Then it occurred to me, the bridge in Nicaragua, what would be my part? What would be my step of faith? As I continued to sit at the computer, my thoughts became focused on the friends who had passed away the year before, and just how short life really is. When I die, what would people remember about me? Will I be remembered for what I had accomplished at my job? Is this it? Is this all there is to life? Money and daily routines? As I searched for answers in my mind, I unknowingly fell into a deep sleep. I had a vision that at the age of 60, I died and went to heaven. I found myself face to face with Jesus. Looking into my eyes, he asked me one question. 20 years ago, I gave you this vision, and now who have you helped in the past 20 years? Thinking back, my eyes quickly fell away from his face. My head hung low as I answered, "No one, Lord, no one." He simply said, "Then go back and start telling the stories I will give to you. Tell others about me and help as many people as you can." As I awoke, somewhat startled, I realized I was still only 40. Then I began to type, and this is what I typed. In my life, it's been tough getting to the top, having to paddle very hard. Now I'm at the top of my career and what I set out to achieve in my career. All that appears to be left is the slow ride down the middle of the river. 40 life years gone, 20 good life years left. 17 career years gone, 20 career years left. But what will be different then from now? What more is there to accomplish at my job? Nothing. Oh, more money? But what do I need that I do not already have? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I am happy now, the happiest I have ever been in my entire life. But will I continue to be happy, knowing that I didn't help more people along the way like I have such a passion to do? Then why not look for another mountain to climb? Oh, that would require leaving the safety of the boat, which is moving slowly down the middle of life's stream. That would mean getting out of the boat and into the water, going onto the shore. Danger, unknowns, perils, falls, trips, etc. Building the bridge in Nicaragua, I feel like I have one foot out of the boat, but what will it take to move the other? Could it be the bridge to faith? Is that the mountain I want to climb? My final mountain? But what's on the other side? Possible more blessings from God? Blessings beyond comprehension? What am I afraid of? Oh, I know, leaving the boat and getting out into the water and having to fight the current to swim to shore. Then the people in the boat will be yelling, "Why did he leave the safety of the boat? What was he thinking?" To which my reply will be, "I had to. I needed another mountain to climb. I wasn't going to simply waste the life I have left going through the daily routines, weekly routines, monthly routines, yearly routines. This is why I left the boat, to rediscover what life is about, helping other people. After I had finished typing, I went into the living room and fell down on my knees at the sofa and poured my heart out to God. I prayed for God to show me what He wanted with my life. I asked Him to show me His purpose for my life and to provide me a mountain to climb, a challenge in my life. That night I had a dream. I was in a large body of water. Satan had thrown chains around my body and was dragging me down. I was drowning. I struggled to fight free, but couldn't. Satan was dragging me all the way to the bottom, and there was nothing I could do. I knew this was spiritual warfare, and it was my life that was caught in the battle. As I looked toward the surface one last time, staring into a bright light, I saw a hand reaching down. I grabbed hold. As he began to pull me towards the surface, Satan's chains began to break. At last, I was free. I remember waking up and being completely terrified at what I had just dreamed. As I thought about the dream, I knew exactly what it meant. Even though I had been a confessing Christian since the age of 13, I had never fully committed my life to Christ and His purposes. This is what God wanted, for me to turn my whole life over to Him. I had tithed and attended church services, revivals, and Bible studies most of my life. I had served as a deacon at Jones Crossroads Baptist Church in Lancaster and now at Sandy Level Baptist Church in Blythewood. But these things were not enough. With the upcoming trip to Nicaragua, I knew I needed to get my heart right with God. If I was going to be a witness to others, I first needed to get the plank out of my own eye. The next evening, March 31st, after looking in a photo album for a special picture from a college mission trip, I saw a boy I did not know. Someone maybe with the same name, but not the same person. I stared at myself in those pictures and thought, who was I? Also in the bookcase were the middle school and high school annuals. I opened one and saw all those people who laughed at my Bobo shoes in elementary school, the colorful $10 ones from the discount store, the shoes worn because that was all my parents could afford. Then I recalled the teasing I got in middle school for wearing old jeans that were too short, better known as high waters, because my parents only bought me new jeans at the beginning of each school year, and the boy who told me I was adopted because my mother didn't want me. The more I looked, the more things popped in my head, all the put-downs that caused me to harbor so many hurt feelings in my heart towards others. The resentment I felt towards all those people, my heart was full of it. I remembered each episode, even the names and faces of those kids who said them. In my heart, I had never forgiven any of them. Even at Reagan's funeral, a school friend who passed away in 2009, I recognized everyone who was there that day, even kids not in my grade. But as I passed by each of them, not one person even made eye contact with me. I went up to several people and called them by name, but nobody recognized me until after I told them mine. Later that evening, as I left for choir practice, I buried these thoughts deep in my heart, promising myself I would never think about them again and to just move on. But at choir practice, as we sang the last song, the words and message to that song went straight to my heart. I thought my heart was going to explode. It couldn't hold any more. It was packed full of stuff I had held on to all my life. Something had to give. After I got home, I went straight upstairs and threw them all out. All the school annuals with all those people in it, and a photo album from my teenage years, because they brought it all back, all those painful memories. I guess everyone has his or her own way of dealing with things in life, but this was my way of dealing with mine. My wife said those were just kids back then, and that was my life, my memories. And I said, no, I don't want to remember who I was. I'm not the same person. Then I shared with her what I wrote. This was my way of putting it all in perspective. In life, it's not important if someone doesn't recognize you for the boy you were, but only when you speak your name, they embrace the man you've become. A man who is a faithful husband to his wife, a nurturing father to his children, but most importantly, a follower of God's will. I dug everything out of my heart that night, giving it all up. For once in my life, I had come to grips with my past. In my heart, I forgave all of those kids. Forgiveness. We all need to give it, and I am so glad I finally did. I now felt a lot different inside, like my heart had just been washed clean. It was a feeling I had never felt before, maybe because I couldn't remember ever feeling any different. Sunday, April 4th, was Easter Sunday. The sermon was on walls. Our youth pastor, Jake, did part one of the message, and he was speaking directly to me. It was just what I needed to hear. Walls in our lives, my life, walls I cannot move past, not without His, Jesus's help. Then I began to realize that all my life, I had built so many walls in my heart. All the stuff I had dug out of my heart, everything I had given up, can be summarized in one word: wall. The second part of the message focused on personal walls, and to break through my personal walls, I need the resurrection power of Jesus. The resurrection power is available through faith. My internal walls, the ones built in my heart, will: 1. No longer control me and my emotions. 2. No longer dominate me and my life. During the altar call, I went forward and taped a piece of paper on the wall set up beside the pulpit. I wrote the words, "My past," on it. At that moment, I felt the walls of my heart come crumbling down. I had finally overcome the things in my life that were holding me back from truly living and had found real peace. It made me realize that continuing to think about the events in my past was meaningless.